you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is looking for love in all the wrong places. And the numbers to call to get coaching on relationships and love and life and living from the inside out, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to begin by setting the table and talking a little bit about our theme. This is sort of a Valentine's Day postmortem, so you can share your Valentine's Day successes and failures. Miseries, whatever your experience was. I personally had a lovely Valentine's Day. My wife and I went to spin class and then had spaghetti bolognese. In fairness, we had gone for a really nice dinner the night before, so we still got a little bit of romance in there going on. I wanted to talk about the different things that it occurs to me that people mean when they say they're looking for love, just as a jumping off point for our conversation. And one of them is, I want to make the picture that I have in my head about what a happy relationship, a happy couple looks like, appear outside my head. So I don't know if the pictures in your head come from Warden June Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver. It's amazing how many people still think of that as, you know, the ideal of what a relationship should look like. Maybe it comes from a movie that that you watched that you loved the way that relationship looked, and you went, I want a relationship like that. But most of us do have an ideal, and I would actually say idealized, image of what a relationship should look like in our heads. And when we say we're looking for love, what we mean is we're looking for that picture. I used to joke when The Secret was really in vogue that I'd met more people who met their ex-partners through The Secret than any other method. And it was a joke, but it was also true. And I always thought the reason was that you can visualize things. And yes, what you visualize, you can manifest. But that's not really what you're looking for. You're not really looking for the 6'2" blonde guy with the jag and the great career who's really sensitive and, you know, loves his mother, but isn't too much of a mama's boy and whatever it is, right? You're not really looking for that. It's just, that's the idea that you've got of what will give you what you actually want. So one thing we say when we're looking for love that throws us off course is we're looking for a picture to be fulfilled. And we don't see how arbitrary and made up that picture is usually. And we almost certainly don't realize that even if we get that picture and make that picture real, we won't necessarily have love. We'll just have the satisfaction of having made our picture real. Now, a second thing that we want when we say we're looking for love, and again, if you want to get in, I'm going to spend as much of the show as I can talking to you guys. So the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. A second thing that we're looking for when we say we're looking for love is we're looking for validation. We're looking for somebody to prove that we're good enough, to prove that we are enough. If somebody loves me, then I can't be that bad. If somebody holds me, then I can't be that bad. If I can please somebody sexually, then at least I have a purpose in the world. Whatever your particular version of that is, most of us have some self-image issues that we think a relationship can fix, that we think having somebody else in our life can fix. And the problem with that is that while having somebody else in your life can temporarily give you relief from the notion that you're not enough, it usually comes at a pretty high price. So there's a story I tell from time to time. I first read it in Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Mastery of Love. And I read his version, but my version is I talk about the pizza guy. So imagine that a pizza guy comes to your door, door of your house, door of your apartment, and goes, "Hey, I got pizza here." You go, "Oh, I didn't order pizza." And he goes, "Yeah, I know, but I thought you might like some." And you think about it, and you go, "Well, I like pizza." And you say, "Well, how much?" He said, "Oh, well, you just have to let me basically abuse you emotionally, mentally, and maybe physically. We'll work that one out." And you're like, "Go away. You know, who the hell do you think you are?" But the pizza guy keeps coming. And one day you're really, really hungry. And you think, you know, how much abuse for one slice? You go, "Oh, hardly any." So you have a slice. It's really good. It's really satisfying. You get a little bit of abuse. And you go, "Well, I don't want this abuse." And so you send him away. And the next day, the pizza guy's there. You know, "Hey, pizza." And you're like, "Oh, not today." But then the third day, okay, two slices. And gradually, it just gets easier to let him move in. Now, by the way, the pizza guy can be a pizza girl, right? This is not a one-way street. But we get caught up in this situation where we think the only way to satisfy that feeling of emptiness is the pizza guy, is somebody outside of us trading what we think we need for what we're willing to put up with. And the sad thing, or the wonderful thing, depending on how you look at it, is we have a fully stocked kitchen in our apartment, in our house already. We just don't know it. We already have everything we need inside to fill that feeling. In fact, we're made of the ingredients of that feeling. But we don't know it, so we think we need to go outside of ourselves. We think we need the pizza guy. Here's the third thing that we're sometimes looking for when we think we're looking for love, is we're looking for a sense of security. We're looking for almost relief from having to worry about, will I be alone my whole life, or will I have to find my own way? We're looking for the end of the search, because searching is exhausting. And the problem is that relief is only pleasurable for a certain amount of time. In other words, getting out of hell is so much better than being in hell. But after a time, you realize you didn't get to heaven, you're just in purgatory. And heaven is a whole other thing. So as we go, I'll talk more about the right places to look for love and what else looking for love can mean. But for now, we're going to go to the phones. One more time, the number is 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin our world tour today in Connecticut with Judy. Judy, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Michael, thank you so much. This is Judy. I really appreciate you taking my call.
You're very welcome.
You know, it's so interesting because what you just said in 5 minutes pretty much encapsulates my entire situation. And your analogy to the purgatory really, really hit me big, because I'm in a relationship that will be going on 3 years this May with a gentleman who, for all intent and purposes, treats me extremely well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really is a very upstanding, great guy. Mm-hmm. But he can't, for many reasons, he's single, he's not married or anything like that, commit and tell me that he loves me or move forward in the relationship. So what I'm finding is that what once felt like security and relief is now starting to feel more like suffering. And it's not hell by any means, but it certainly isn't heaven.
So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You say for many reasons, not one of which is that he's already married to somebody else.
Well, I just didn't want you to think.
No. Absolutely. That was the first place I went. So now, what are those reasons? Does he not have a tongue? Is that why he can't say that he loves you?
I believe, based on the conversations and time we've spent together, that he has been incredibly wounded. with his prior relationships, and that he is simply shut off. His actions speak very loving to me, but he will not take that plunge.
Strange question again, maybe, but
okay,
how do you feel about him?
Oh, well, up until a little while ago, very much in love with him, but I'm starting to feel such strong dissatisfaction that if he does one thing that isn't, he doesn't do anything bad, but less than
stellar.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, he sent me on Valentine's Day some of those little pictures of a bouquet of flowers, because he's got this thing about, you know. But then it was like, how come he didn't send me a red rose? And there's a long story behind that. But that's the kind of thinking that lately I've been. It's almost like we could be together and he could be doing five things great, and then there'll be one thing that will be, to me, like, wow, this got really...
So let me ask you this, Judy. If you didn't have a voice in your head, a voice of dissatisfaction in your head, how would you rank your relationship? How would you rate it? You know, there's but for that thinking, which I get and I understand and we'll talk about, but for that, how's your relationship?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
Well, he's like my best friend.
Great. So here's what might be good to notice that.
Okay.
Because the voice in your head comes and goes, right? We've all got one.
Yeah.
Right. It's just our personal thing, and we get some idea of how it should be, and most of the time we can dismiss it out of hand. You know, we kind of know that there's an old, and I'm going to get this wrong, but there's an old quote from a woman named Judith Viorst from the 70s that said, infatuation is when he's as handsome as Robert Redford, as athletic as Jimmy Connors, as funny as Woody Allen, and as smart as Henry Kissinger.
Mm-hmm.
And love is when you realize that he's as smart as Jimmy Connors, as athletic as Henry Kissinger, as handsome as Woody Allen, and as smart as Robert Redford, but you love him anyways.
Exactly.
And so if you recognize that voice of dissatisfaction for what it is, which is just sometimes our thought just starts feeling real. And it just starts looking more important than the feeling of connection and goodwill and affection that we have for one another.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we start taking that too seriously, it can kill any relationship.
Yeah,
but if you see
true.
It for what it is, which is part of the universal affliction I tend to call noise in head, then it also just, you see that it comes and goes. And what lingers is the feeling of connection and the feeling of affection and the fun that you can have together.
Right.
And those are the things that are the basis of fantastic long-term relationships.
Yeah.
Now, if he ever cares... And I don't mean that in a dismissive way, but if he would like to, I'd love for him to phone in at some point, and I'd love to talk to him about how he could really quickly move past what might feel like a very real, permanent scarring.
Yeah.
But even whether or not he finds his way with that, because he could find his way through that without me too.
Exactly.
But whether he finds his way through that, it sounds to me like you've got a wonderful, loving relationship, and you got some noise in the head about it right now that if you let it, will pass through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate your clarifying that for me.
Well, it's a pleasure, Judy. Thank you for phoning in.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Pleasure talking to you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, it's funny because I can imagine somebody is sitting there going, hey, that's no, it, he should have given her a red rose, and it's not okay that he won't commit, and it's not okay that he won't do that. And it's like, well, okay. But if you want to be in a relationship with a human being and not an imaginary character in your own head, they live in a separate reality to you. That's a given. We all live in thought-created realities. We all live in internally generated models of the world. We all experience life from the inside out. And so you're never going to meet somebody who agrees with you about everything, does everything you think they should, acts in exactly the ways that you think you should. And to be honest, if you do, I would be a little bit scared because you might be in Groundhog Day and they might be faking it. Just a little back reference for those of you who listened to the show on Bill Murray last week. But if you're willing to live with a human being and you're willing to embrace the fact that the world looks different to them than it does to you, and it always will, but you can share your worlds together and enrich both worlds through the sharing, then you can have a fantastic, long-term, loving relationship without ever having to sort out all the details on your list of must-haves and can't-haves and won't-haves and shouldn't-haves. I'm not saying don't have standards. I'm saying don't kid yourself that your standards are more important than love. Because they're not. And your real standards, and what I mean by that, not putting up with abusive behavior, not being okay with living in fear, not sacrificing yourself completely in hopes of retaining the affection of another. Those are standards everyone has, because they're not really standards. They're just common sense when you're not distracted by your own fearful, insecure thinking. You know, whether or not they remember to bring you roses, my dad and mom were 36 years married. They were such a loving couple that for the first probably 10 years of my own marriage, I felt inadequate because I was comparing us to them as if somehow I could compare my insides to somebody else's outsides and have it be a meaningful comparison. But my dad always forgot their anniversary. I don't even know why. Like, he wasn't a forgetful guy by nature, but he just somehow managed to always forget their anniversary. And it really did piss my mom off for an hour. Sometimes four. And then they went back to being this incredibly loving couple. It's just the reality of sharing your life with another human being. They're not you. And that turns out to be an exceedingly good thing. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go up to Seattle and let's speak with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, related to relationships, a monogamy and what you just called common sense, or what you define as abusive, I'm wondering how you differentiate that from just a product of our thoughts. Assuming you love your husband, I'm speaking third person, obviously, for some reason, but you love your husband dearly, everything's great when you're with him, but you also know that he has other women, and that's what he does. Mm-hmm. And how to not let that bother you? Or is that common sense, or is that abusive?
Well, okay. So I'm going to risk the ire of every female listener here. So just know that I'll take the hit. I don't think there's any way I can define that as abusive unless literally it's being flaunted in your face and shoved in front of your friends. And, you know, it's a lifestyle choice that you may not want to be a part of. So let's take abuse off the table for that one. Is that fair enough, or do you want to wrestle with me a little bit on that one?
In a sense, isn't it good that it would be open and out there, and the person says, "This is how I live. I'm going to do this. It's not a secret," and this person is out and about. Mm.
Well, so. In my mind, and I understand, I'm walking close to the edge of a cliff here. But in my mind, at that point, if it is open and it is out there, again, all I'm saying is that isn't abusive. It's just a choice.
Right. Right.
So that's what I mean when I said let's take abuse off the table, because abuse is a very loaded word, and
right.
And I certainly feel very differently when there is physical, emotional, mental abuse involved. But the question is not how do I make myself okay with it. It's really much more just seeing, am I? You know, in other words, is in point of fact, am I actually okay with it, but I'm trying to make myself not okay with it because I don't think I should be okay with it? Or am I really fundamentally not okay with it and I'm trying to make it okay because I don't want to risk the relationship?
Well, the question would be why, and I'm going to say why am I not okay with it? Why am I not okay with that? Is it just a product of my thinking?
Well, it's a fair question, Elizabeth, but it's a more loaded question than it sounds. Because the fact that everything is made of thought does not mean therefore we should make ourselves think whatever is expedient. We think how we think, and whether, you know, it's coming from a deep part of ourself, or whether it's coming from our conditioning, or whether it's coming from society. Like, I understand that being in a monogamous, faithful relationship is a product of the society that I have grown up in, and that if I lived in a different country, or I had lived in this country in a different time, it would not necessarily be the ideal that I held myself to. I recognize it as a thought-created, culturally-created standard. And I'm okay with that.
But
I also have friends, right? I have friends who are in open relationships who are okay with that. I have friends who are in monogamous relationships who wish they weren't. And I have friends who are in open relationships who wish they weren't.
Right. So I think I'm understanding. You're saying that you're not making yourself think a certain way. That's not the point, to make yourself think.
It's simply noticing that I do have an opinion if I do.
And yet then the emotional, you know, physical response, the pit in the stomach, that kind of feeling that comes from thinking that your partner is not faithful or is not monogamous. The physical response that happens when you think things, especially in relationships.
So here's where emotion can get in the way of knowing. Right? It's very easy to mistake our emotional response, which is actually a response to the thinking we have in the moment, from our deeper knowing, which is just a felt sense of the direction that we want to go in. In other words, regardless of your opinion of monogamy, something in you knows to stay or to go, or to confront, or to back off.
So the knowing is then a preference? The knowing is...
See, to me, the knowing, and I'm not trying to state this as factual. I experience it. The knowing is simply a deeper guidance system. So what your when people try to use their emotions as a guidance system, they're going all over the place because their emotions are all over the place because their emotions are just shadows of their thinking. Right?
Right.
So,
right.
So if you try
the
and
and intuitive and connected to something greater, I get that. But it's getting to that point where you touch and tap into the knowing.
Right. And that's for you in your quieter moments,
yes.
In your heart of hearts, are you out?
Hmm. And are you asking me a question, or are you having
I am.
Me?
No, I'm asking you a question.
Am I out?
Are you out?
Out of
the relationship.
That's a good question. That's probably where the work for me is to be done. That third person, huh? That's where the work is to be done. Is I guess I'm not real clear. The me that is speaking right now, or the knowing, is the knowing me not clear, or the thinking me is probably the not clear.
Well, look, the thinking about it, and all that entails, with all the discomfort and all the voices in your head telling you what you should be doing and what you should be feeling and what you shouldn't be doing and what you shouldn't be feeling and how you should be making yourself feel this instead of that because it's just thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what's making it not obvious to you.
Right.
Whether you're in or you're out.
But as the ability to tap into the knowing, or to be in that place of that stillness and that quiet, and realizing, are you in or you out? That's where it is, and that's just spending time there more, and just getting to know it more.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to make it simpler than that if you'll let me. If you can acknowledge that at the moment you just don't know what to do, is that fair?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then what that opens up is, well, if I don't know, then I'm better off not knowing until I know than trying to figure it out with my thinking mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying.
So, you know, go have a nice day. Go to the movies.
You know, mm-hmm. And wait upon the knowing.
Do what you do, right. And when you know, you'll know.
Right.
But you're not doing yourself, the system, or anything else any good trying to figure it out. If you knew, you'd know.
Right. Oh, okay. Got it.
Cool.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, I hope anyone is still listening. I'm going to tell this story. I don't tell this story often because it could be misheard, and all I can ask is that you don't mishear it. I have always said, and on the show, I have always maintained that the only exception to my not giving specific advice about what to do is if somebody is in a situation of physical abuse. Well, one day I was speaking with a woman, not on the air, who'd reached out to me off the air. And she told me she was in an abusive relationship. Now, she told me it was not a physically abusive relationship. It later turned out that it had been. But we had a conversation, and there was something in me, my kind of, oh, I hate this, you know, wanted to tell her, you need to leave this jerk. You need to rrr and rrr. And something in me that I trust didn't let those words come to my mouth. And I just stayed with her. I listened to her. I shared what occurred to me to share. And we had a nice conversation. Months later, she reached back out to me, and she admitted that the relationship had been physically abusive, and that she had called me because all her friends had told her to leave him. Now, they were an older couple. They'd been together for many, many years. And she said, well, if the great Michael Neal tells me to leave him, I'll leave him. And she said it. She kept waiting for me to tell her that, but I didn't. And that struck her, given how she had set it up. And she thought about it, and she realized that for whatever reason that she couldn't explain, and it wasn't victim-y. She was very clear about that. It wasn't weakness. It wasn't fear. She stayed. But she said it was really interesting, because from that moment forward, he never abused her again. Nothing was ever said, but something in her had shifted, and he never abused her again. It came out 2 months later that he had early onset Alzheimer's, and that the violence was a symptom of that, because it hadn't been a long-term feature in their relationship. And she was writing to tell me that she was really grateful that I hadn't told her to leave him, because it meant that she could see out the rest of their lives together and she could care for him. Now, that is a very specific story. I am not saying, if you can put up with some abuse. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying that what you can see is that underneath your own fearful, insecure, worried, trying to get it right thinking, there is a part of you, a wisdom within, an inner knowing that knows what is right for you. And if you listen for it, you will hear it, and it will guide you. And when you don't hear it, there's nothing to be done other than use your common sense, which in most cases means if you're in an abusive situation, get the hell out. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let us go to Scotland and speak with Blair. Blair, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So I'm supposed to follow that call then. I'm supposed to follow that last bit.
Yeah, no pressure. No pressure. You got this,
no
man.
No pressure at all, Michael. nice to speak. It's been a while. I'm on the Creating the Impossible. I don't know if you've seen my name up there, but I've been keeping quiet, not doing a lot, just sort of listening and, you know, into what you've been up to, your audios and what have you. And it's just to put it by you to see what you think, what your take on what I'm asking as to where I'm at in it. Now, I don't have a specific right. I want to make £250,000, like a lot of money, or meet the girl of my dreams, or, you know, something that's tangible, like you said, or get a job. I've been unemployed 9 years. The thing that comes to me, it's about me, I guess, and it's just have a lovely feeling, a glint in my eye, some breakthrough, some shift, some transformation that's never happened before. And I'm just, you know, it's just the right time for it. I don't know if you ever remember the end of the Shawshank Redemption, the film.
Where they meet at the on the beach.
Aye, and it's kind of like that. It's like the look in Andy Dufresne's eyes, the peace that he's got. It's just, you know, you see it through the film what he's been through. You know, it's just been one hell. I remember watching it for the first time, thinking nothing of it. It's still my favorite film to this day. And it's kind of like that. That's kind of what I'm looking for, because it kind of feels, kind of contradicts what we said in the previous call, where you said, your problem to me seems like it's a story. And that's kind of like a story about my life, but that's kind of what I'm looking for. A glint in my eye, just something lovely. And I've done a future self exercise. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, by a guy called Michael Seeley in Australia. And I was listening today, and every time I listen to it, and it's maybe about what you were saying, about just wait, there's something telling you, look, it's okay, just keep going. And it's always I get from this exercise, it's follow the feeling, follow the good feeling you get in this exercise. Now, where I'm at in the program, I'm worried, you know, you've talked about momentum, and you've talked about indicators of where you're at, and also do the thing. My worry is that I've made progress, but I'm like a football soccer team who's pretty passes, but not going for the killer instinct, the cutting edge.
Okay, maybe so let me jump in, Blair, just because it. I think for a lot of people listening, they're not going to know what we're talking about. And also, just so you know, I'm gonna put you on hold. You're still here, and I'll bring you back on. But it's just there's background noise. So what Blair's talking about. So I run a program called Creating the Impossible. It's also the subject of my new book, which will be out in September from Hay House. And the essential idea of the program is to see that you can be about creating things even without believing that they're possible or believing in yourself. That the process of creation is not dependent on that kind of either self-belief or belief in possibility. It's simply dependent on desire and willingness to be about creating it anyways. Now, what Blair's talking about, I will bring Blair back on, but what Blair's talking about as his project is a way of being, a way of feeling, a certain experience of life. And that is subject to completely different set of rules than creating in the world. So when it comes to inside us, it's much more of a mining operation than a manufacturing operation. So creating in the world is a manufacturing operation. You are creating something from nothing. You're bringing something into being which did not exist in the world before you created it. When it comes to finding your deeper self, the glint in your eye, your inspiration, your well-being, that's already inside you. That's not a creation. That's a discovery. That's not something you manufacture. That's something you uncover, you discover, you mine, you go in search of. And so, Blair, when I hear you talk about it, I hear that you have found, actually, you've begun to find some access to that feeling through this future self exercise. And then there's a part of you that goes, yeah, but aren't I supposed to do something to make it happen faster? Well, if it was a creative manufacturing project, sure, that might be relevant. But in a mining operation, you can only go as quickly as you can go because you don't want to miss it. You know, if you think of like an archaeological dig, one of the problems with predicting how long an archaeological dig will take is even when once you start to find things, you kind of have to slow down because you don't want to damage anything in attempting to dig it out. Now, this is a metaphor, so I don't know how much damaging of our well-being we can do, but it doesn't follow the same rules as creating on the outside. So I'm going to bring you back on, Blair, just so you can share what you hear in that.
Oh, yeah. You still hear me?
Yeah.
No pressure again, because I'm sitting there going, shit, what am I going to say? Are you basically saying that the worry I had in it was, am I on the right program here? Because although having said that, I heard Lynn and I've heard you saying, look, it's a direction. If it's a direction you're going in, then just keep going with it. And you have said it's your own creating the impossible. But my worry is that this is not going to reveal itself, like you say. You'll know when you'll know, as you keep saying. It's not going to reveal itself any quicker than what I'm hoping it will. That's my worry is. I'm not going into details, Michael. There's a lot of things in my life just now, like family issues and fear of getting into a fight with a teenager like tonight, that kind of thing, where everything just feels like it could go pear-shaped. And, you know, like everything, it's just a fear.
Yeah, let me try and address it direct, Blair. And again, I'm just going to put you on hold for the background noise. So I say you can't rush it. I say you can't push it. I say you can't make it happen because it's something that's already there. But also understand it's one thought away. You are literally one thought away from that glint. At any moment. At any moment, and if, believe me, if I could make this happen with my magic wand, I would. But at any moment, you can drop out of all the drama of your life. Find yourself in the present moment. Find yourself in love, in the feeling of love that we are, just to begin to tie it back to our theme for today. And you may still have to deal with teenagers in the street who want to get in fights, and you may still have to deal with a family that doesn't behave itself in the way that we would hope our families would behave themselves, and you will still have to deal with your life such as it is, but it's a completely different life with the feeling soundtrack of love than it is without that soundtrack. And that's why it's worthwhile. So is creating the impossible the course that I would recommend for that particular goal? Probably not. But that doesn't mean that if that's what you were guided on, that's not a path that will still get you there. Because there is one thought away. So we'll try one more time, Blair, and then I'm going to move forward. What was there for you?
What is interesting, I'll be quick because I know you've got other people on. You talked about doing this thing. You know, what would be the thing that would get you to there? And one thing that came to mind, although it could just be in the moment I'm thinking this, was give my notice to my landlord, go and live somewhere else, because I've lived here for most of my life. You know, do something that's a symbol, like you were saying, a symbol of risk kind of thing. And I spoke to my friend about it, and he didn't know. I feel like I need to do something, and I just don't know, and it's really tough at times. I can't explain how tough it is. And just get this in, Michael, you talk about progress made, and maybe I'm sowing the seeds within the 90 days you were talking about, and the results won't come to 20 years down the line. I just kind of am a bit lost. I'm struggling to understand what you mean by the mining, the manufacturing, what have you. It's okay. Just, I don't know. I'm a leader of that. Thanks, Mike.
No, absolutely. No, that's fair. And stay with the program. And again, if you're up for posting or coming on a call within the program, I'm happy to talk to you more. More there, but let me address it both for Blair, but in a more general sense, because it kind of does relate directly to, well, if we've been looking for love in all the wrong places, where exactly are the right places? And what I'm saying, as best I can, is that there is no progress to the feeling of love. You're in it or you're not in any moment. There's no journey. There is no distance from where you are now to the feeling of well-being, the feeling of peace, the feeling of love, the feeling of knowing that all is okay. So external measures are not relevant to that particular goal, because you already are the destination. You're just not noticing it right now. And in any moment, you can notice it. In any moment, you can feel it, because it's there underneath the noise of the world, the noise of your thoughts, the noise of the inside of your mind. And so what you do or don't do on the outside is going to be relevant to what happens on the outside. But you can have all your circumstances be idyllic and not be in the feeling of love and well-being and peace. And you can be, as we know from the writings of Viktor Frankl and other people throughout history, you can be in the midst of the most horrific external circumstances and be deeply connected to God, to life, to love, to peace. And if you let those be two different things, you'll find both of them are much easier. It's when we try to change the world to change the way we feel that we struggle, because the world is far less malleable than our own thoughts. And that's kind of part of our theme. If we want to look for love in the right place, well, it's us. It's what we're made of. It's who we are. And other people become like a mirror, like an echo chamber, like an amplification device that makes it easier to feel and see the love we are inside reflected on the outside. And that's why We don't need someone else in order to be in love, because we are in love. Like that's the air that surrounds us. That's the energy that we live. That's a description of the nature of life, right? If you've ever been around a newborn, whether it's a newborn puppy or a newborn kitten or a newborn human, chances are you felt the feeling of connection, and you felt it whether or not you had anything to do with that newborn, right? It might not have been your puppy. It might not have been your child, but you felt it anyways. You know, we think that we need to have things in common to feel that feeling of connection. Oh my God, you went to that school? I went to that school. Oh my God, you like pasta? I like pasta. Oh my gosh, you like this movie? That's my favorite movie. But you've had moments where you've just caught somebody's eye and you've connected. You know nothing about them. They know nothing about you. You may never have followed up on it. You may never have said a word. You may never have even met them. If you've traveled to a country where people speak a different language than you, I'm sure you've had the experience of connecting with people and having a great time trying to communicate with people that you know nothing about. Because the connection is human to human. The connection is heart to heart. The connection is soul to soul. The connection is before the words. It's before the thought-created realities. It's before the form. In fact, even connection isn't necessarily the best word. Because in order to connect, we have to separate. So at an even deeper level, that which looks through my eyes is that which looks through your eyes back at me. Now, there's a very narcissistic way of interpreting that, but I'm trying to point to it at a deeper level. But the level that most of us get to experience it at is that which is in me connecting to that which is within you and recognizing a kindred spirit. Finding a playmate. Somebody that you can enjoy spending time with. Somebody whose company you can appreciate and enjoy. And but for those times where it starts to look really important how they leave the toilet seat, how they squeeze the toothpaste tube, whether they give you a single red rose or something else, or whatever it is that in the moment seems so important, and when the moment's gone, you look back and go, what was I thinking? That didn't matter at all. Underneath all that is love. Now, here's the really neat thing. If we're made of love, right? If we don't need to go looking for love, if we don't need to get lucky in love, then feeling love with another human being does not mean that I have to be in relationship with them. It means I can be in love with everyone. Doesn't mean I will be, doesn't mean I have to be, but I could be. And so being in love is not necessarily a great criteria for being in relationship. Right? There are other things that probably matter to you in relationship. And that's okay. That's legit. Why not? You know, I say sometimes in groups that most people have experienced sex without intimacy. But if you let yourself, you can experience intimacy without sex. And that just lets you experience a lot more intimacy with a lot more people. And how many sexual partners you have, that's going to kind of come down to the way the world looks to you. And like I say, I'm quite happy with my, limited cultural belief system. I remember giving a talk at the United Nations years ago now. The talk was about the myths of success and the myths of life. And we talked a lot about cultural mythology in the talk and how each culture had its own mythology, its own set of ideas about how people should behave. And they were often in direct contradiction to each other. And it became apparent to most people that, wow, there's a real arbitrariness to this as to why we believe what we believe. And I remember this one young woman who was there. She was worked for one of the ambassadors, and she asked me afterwards. She kind of took me to one side and said, so are you saying I should have sex with my boyfriend? And I was like, I am pretty damn sure that is not what I am saying, because I know nothing about you. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, you know, I've realized that you know, we're not having sex because, it's my parents' cultural belief that I've taken on, that blah, blah, blah. But he's not from my culture, so he doesn't have that belief, and blah, blah, blah. And what I pointed her to as best I could was that underneath all that, she knew. There is a place of knowing in all of us that knows what's right for us for now. That knows whether we're in or we're out for now. Not because. See, as soon as you introduce because, you're introducing your separate reality. You're introducing your thoughts, your personal thinking. You're introducing your ideas about how life should be. You're introducing your concepts and notions and beliefs. You want to look before because. Am I in or am I out? Do I want to be with this person or don't I? Do I want to stay in this relationship or not? Do I want to go to the movies tonight or not? Do I want chicken for dinner or not? Not because. Just because. So, just to go back kind of full circle, we talked about the different things that we're really looking for when we say we're looking for love. Well, one way of talking about it is that what we're all looking for all the time is a good feeling. We're looking to live in a good feeling. That's what I heard Blair talking about. He wants to live in a good feeling, at least more of the time than he does now. Me too. My guess is you too. And love is one of the most beautiful feelings available to us. So if we could experience love more of the time, well, that would be fantastic. But it doesn't have to look like anything. See, if we think love has to look like a monogamous relationship between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or whatever, or if we think love has to look like a polygamous relationship between partners, or we think love has to look like a loyal bond between boy and dog, or whatever, then we have a very limited availability, and we're going to look in a very, very small portion of a very, very infinite ocean of possibility. When we see that the feeling of love is inside us, and that we can feel it for a flower, or a picture, or a human, or an animal, or ourselves, or the world, or an idea, a notion, a concept, well, then we can be in love with anything at any time. And that's a beautiful way to live. Now, I'm saying it. I don't live there all the time. But boy, do I love it when I do. And just knowing that it's available, that it's ever present, that I don't have to go anywhere to find it, it gives me a sort of an ease around it that lets me really enjoy it when it's there and not freak myself and everyone else out when it's not. So I hope you've enjoyed today's show. If you're new to my work, please check me out online, michaelneal.org, and you'll find lots of videos and blogs and cool stuff about living from the inside out. We also have a program we just announced this week, and it's almost full, a mastermind small group program called Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities, and you can find that at michaelneal.org/infinite. And you'll find writers' workshops and all sorts of other things there as well. So, until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.